Today's episode is brought to you by AOS Kitchens, the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists. Welcome to another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. We're lucky enough to have Neil from Grilla Gorilla here today with us. And we're going to split this into a two-part episode because it's fantastic. Also, there's a little bit of swearing in there. So if you've got any little ones around, maybe don't listen to this one in front of them, but you're going to enjoy it. And the content's so good, I did not want to strip any of that out. But Neil will go through all of that with you in a second. So without much further ado, here's Neil. Hi, Neil. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. For anyone who doesn't know, introduce yourself and tell everyone who you are.
Hi, I'm Neil, also known as Grilla Gorilla on Instagram and Facebook. And I like to not burn food in my back garden and make it rather tasty.
I hope occasionally you do, so we've got something fun to talk about later. But anyone who's listening...
Of course I have.
Yeah. If you've not heard of Grilla Gorilla... Do a pause right now, pull over your car if you're driving, look on Instagram and look at some of the stuff that's being produced, because Neil knows how to cook and a huge variety of stuff, which I like. It's not always things that you'd expect people to be producing on a barbecue. And that's what I enjoy about your page anyway. Is that something you've deliberately gone for when you're cooking and that page?
Yeah, I've always tried to add... You know, people say, oh, I like to do a twist and things like that. It's like, no, I want to do something where somebody else goes, you know what, I never thought of that. I'd like to give that a go. Like a prime example is when I first started cooking, I cooked a leg of lamb on a kadai. And what I did was I drilled a hole in the bone and I hung the lamb and then I put a vortex upside down and I piled the coals around the outside.
Nice.
So that it was like a radiant cook. So instead of like just cooking lamb, you know, smoking it and maybe raising the heat and doing the outside and crisping it up, is I just basically just let it hang. And I kind of wanted to go a bit medieval on it. You know, it's back in the day when people set up fires and stuff. They didn't sit there tending stuff. They just hung it on a hook and they buggered off and went and found mushrooms. Hopefully the kind that don't leave them weird paisley effects in the sky and the ability to hear clouds grinding past each other. But they had to forage and go off and do things. So, yeah, it's a case of, like, let it ride. So I always try and do things kind of, like, a little bit differently, if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I just completely just get off subject straight away and just say that for anyone that went to Sizzle Fest or knows about Sizzle Fest, we are talking to the 2022 Hot Wings champion.
Yeah, thank you.
So I know after the first year there was a bit of disappointment in not winning it, but you absolutely smashed it this year.
But the thing is fair play to T-Bone the first year. I mean, the guy is an absolute joy to be around, to listen to talk to hang with, and he beat me by 3 seconds last year. And that stuff was fairly hot, and I'm glad he won it. You know, it was awesome. So it gave me something this year to go for. And I haven't practiced. I am not very tolerant to heat either. I mean, you know, I don't know if you watch closely in that, if you look at the video, there are a couple of times where I am. What happened in round three is some chili actually went into my ear canal and I was in trouble. And my head was going, you haven't got time to cough. You just got to get it done, put a fang on it, get it eaten, get it swallowed, you know, and just crack on. And at one point, I mean, I'm sitting there and there's just an absolute white noise of crowd roaring and baying. I've never known anything like it in my life. And I just hear James yelling, T-Bone is out. And my heart broke a little bit. Mm. I was like, I want me and T-Bone to be there at the end and what have you. And he went out and I was like, damn. And but your head's down, you've got to carry on, you've got to just match the molars, strip them insanely stupidly hot sodding wings. You know, was it six rounds
five rounds, wasn't it?
And five rounds, six wings each. Mm-hmm. And we're starting off with like Well, put it this way, when Sizzlefest opened that morning, I went to see Weymouth 51. And he goes, oh, one of your things is here. I went, oh, really? I thought, you know what? Bit of prior knowledge. I'll give it a go. And I got one of them little, like, them skinny, like, lollipop sticks. And I dabbed it, and it was the Carolina Reaper 70. Mm-hmm. And I says, why is it called 70? And Weymouth goes, oh, because it's 70% Carolina Reaper. I said, okay. So I did that bit where you sort of go in, out, dead quick. You don't want too much on the end of the stick. It's like the bare minimum. And I licked it. And I made some funny noises for 3 minutes. I mean, like, people looking at me going, like, is that dude okay? And, like, Nick from, like, Bokoa and TMZ, the guys over there were, like, looking at me, like, really concerned. I was hiccuping. I was coughing. And the thing I described to you guys, it was like having a wet willy where, you know, somebody licks their finger and puts it in your ear. But from the inside of my skull outwards. Oh. I think that was like round two or something, you know what I mean? I was like, holy shit, what the hell have I let myself in for?
I think what got T this year was speed, because T can handle his heat. That guy, he sent me a hot sauce before and that was ridiculously hot.
Was it grandpa's hot sauce?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
but the thing is, it was the speed that got him. I don't know if he felt he was warming up or anything, but completely took him by surprise how quick everyone was. That's what was impressive by what you managed to achieve, because it wasn't just hot this year. It felt like it was two times as fast as the year before.
I mean, last year, he was... I thought he was blisteringly fast last year. Mm. You know, like, to my left, I had... Wolf Shack was on my left. And, he was sitting there nibbling, and then I could see him, like, as I was like just spinning a wing round, I could see him turn around, and he was just like, oh dear. And the other two guys on the end, they were like, they weren't even close. And it was just like, they were doing a good job. In fact, one of the guys that was in it last year was the photographer this year. So I think he already had prior knowledge of who to look for, how much suffering was going on, and who to like zoom in and take a picture of. You know, he got some great pictures. And I was just like offering him like wings, and he was just like, "Nope, don't want to touch."
But I've never seen such hysteria for a chili eating contest. Like, the whole crowd was super involved. But
yeah,
obviously, when it came down to the final, and there was you and the other chap that, you know, was quite colourful with his language, and I suppose was almost like the villain in the pantomime.
Good cop, bad cop, wasn't it?
That was 100%. Yeah. But, you know, there was probably, the best part of 500 people shouting your name, willing you to win that contest. That was like euphoria.
That was to look down the centre of the crowd and see the Angus and Oink crowd. I look straight down at them, and they are literally right at the back, and they're looking at me, and they're like, "You got this. This is yours." And at one point, I was struggling, and I looked down in the crowd, and right in front of me was a black girl, and I looked her in the eye, and I was gipping. And I was like, "I've got to get this done." And she looked me in the eye, and she goes, "You got this." And the hairs went up on my arms. Right, I'm like, I'm not so sure. And I just carried on going. And I think, remember the host, the guy that was on the microphone, he came up to me afterwards and he went, "Tortoise in the hair." He said, "You just carried on nibbling and carried on going." And I don't think the guy that was to my left understood. It's clean bones, empty mouth.
Yeah.
And he was putting his arms up, and it was like, but what happened was, in the last round, he was stripping the chicken wings, and he threw one on the table, and it landed in front of me, and I clocked it. I thought, there's meat on that.
Yeah.
And I've got until he picks that up, and that's when I've got to get going. And I was on the last wing, and he picked it up, and I just went, and I swallowed, and I put my arms up. His arms up were already. James went, "Open your mouth." I went, like that. And he went, "Open your mouth." And the other guy opened his mouth, and it was full of chicken. The next one, though, is someone's grabbed my arm. I'm yanked out the seat. I'm sitting there with my arms up in the air, and the crowd was absolutely screaming. Oh,
it was chaotic. But glasses went in the air. It was amazing.
No, it was like, but I was sat up there watching like beer being thrown in the air, and I'm like, I'm just a guy trying his best not to cry or throw up, eating like a shitload of nuclear wings. And it was the bit when he said, like, "Who do you want to win?" And he went up to me, and it was like, 99.75% of the crowd cheered for me. And then they went to this guy, and it's like five guys cheered, which were his mates. And then the rest of the crowd booed. And I was just like, well, I've got to do it now. I've got to do it.
No choice. No choice whatsoever.
I've just got to crack on, haven't I?
You must have been sore for a couple of days after.
Dude, have you ever heard the term fire hose? Now, the plan was, so basically, I got out there, I washed my hands, I scrubbed my nails, I washed my beard, I washed everywhere from my forehead, basically down to my chest, right? Washed it. I even changed tops to make sure there's nothing on me. I decided, I think James... Live to Barbecue had sorted me out an Airbnb that night as well. I said, James, I'm awfully sorry. I'm going home because I don't want to risk motorway services tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even going to go there. Right. So I said, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge tonight. As soon as Sizzle Fest ends at 11 o'clock, I'm in my car, I'm gone. So that happens. After the competition, I went straight over the road to the co-op garage over the road. I bought a 4-pack of Magnum Choc Ices, a fridge milkshake. It was like, what's the biggest one you've got? I think I bought a Kit Kat Chunky because fat is what binds all that heat and what have you. Get rid of it. And I scrammed 4 Choc Ices. And there were people coming up to me crying with laughter, taking pictures going, you're at a barbecue festival where you're surrounded by flames, fire, smoke. And you're the only guy eating Choc Ices at a barbecue festival. And it's like, there's a bloody good reason for that. And that's tomorrow morning. That's what I'm up. I think I even said on stage, it's like, you know, I'm going to wipe my arse with a Cornetto tomorrow. So
I think those are your exact words.
Yeah.
Pretty much so. So I'm in the car, I'm going down the motorway, and I'm going along, and I'm like, I'm in silence. There's no radio on or nothing like that. And it's about midnight. So I've been on the road about an hour, and I get, oh no, I think they got to Warwick services, right? And it was so I didn't realize this. I thought I had plenty of time, but I didn't realize this. We started eating the first hot wings at like 7 o'clock, and it ended about 7:45.
Yeah,
so at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm thinking, I've got till tomorrow morning to get home and go to Tesco, buy a 4-pack of Cornettos and wet wipes and I don't know, whatever. And I got to Warwick services and it hit me then. That was a bad memory. And then I got to the next services and then I went for a wee and experienced what is known as fire hose. And when you're sitting there and it's like, you know, when a chihuahua is about to bite someone, I'm at the toilet and I'm like that. not a happy memory in any way whatsoever.
That was going to be my barbecue fail this episode. I was saving this story up, and Owen probably remembers what I'm about to say. So as you were doing that final hot wing challenge, there was one tray left. There's one tray left. And so they went to the crowd, does anyone want to have it? And Owen knows me better than most people. If there's free food, particularly if no one accepts it on the first call, I'm in. I occasionally do the very British thing of let someone else pick. And when no one else did, I was like, right, I'll have them. So I grabbed one, sat back, ate it. Very hot, very hot. Hats off to you. I would have struggled with 6 of them, particularly on the clock. And I was like, I was sweating. I was like, right. I went over to the cocktail stand, wiped my hands with as many paper towels and stuff as I could, went to the bathroom, washed my hands, washed my face and didn't feel any problem, went to have a wee. And I kid you not, I could not stand upright for about an hour and a half hour. I was waddling around, bent over, almost like a tripod, leant forward. I can't do this. I can't do this. And
it's probably akin to slamming your Johnson in a fridge door and branding it afterwards. The worst part was, bearing in mind, as every services I washed religiously. I mean, my nails were scrubbed. Mm. I washed my hands like I was about to perform open heart surgery. I washed my face everywhere. I swear, I must have been near Cheshire somewhere. And you're late at night, you're in a car, there's nobody else on the road, you get a bit bleary. And I went like that and I rubbed my eye. And it was like somebody got a Fox's Glacier Mint and rubbed it on my eye. It blew out. It literally started to close. And I was like, oh my God. And I opened the glove box, pulled out some wet wipes. And I must have like yanked about 8 wet wipes out. And I pulled them up, I scrunched them into my eye socket and just basically squeegeed my eyeball to stop this burning happening. Yeah, it was too late.
It's ridiculous how long, though, how long that burn is. I couldn't believe it. And, I've washed my hands like 2-3 times when you think of like wipe them down, alcohol wipe them, then wash them like twice in the sink.
I am convinced it comes out of your sweat.
Yeah.
But you said you only ate one and then
I only ate one and that happened. And I was like, I couldn't even stand. I was waddling around for ages because if I stood, I was like, I need movement because one part cannot be touching trousers for any length of time.
Or like
it was very, it was very funny to watch.
I bet it was for you though. I bet you were doubled up laughing.
Yeah,
you're probably given anything for like one of them little Argos 40 quid paddling pools filled with like Jersey cream milk.
What I would say, quickest way to sober up ever, because there's no amount of alcohol that's going to stop that. I mean, people kept trying to talk to me, and I was like, I'm not being horrible, but don't talk to me. I can't physically do this. The noise is almost like overstimulation. I can't right now. God.
Years ago, I used to work in a hotel, and there was a chef, and basically, I'm not going to say I was anything glamorous. I was a pot washer, but this is what led me onto my like food journey. Is I worked in an historic house hotel, Treble H, and it's a Welsh hotel called Boddiscaffin Hall, which is nice. In Llandudno. And basically, they did some amazing food. And to this day, I would still love to know what their peppercorn sauce recipe was, because it was just like, it was like crack in a liquid form. It was beautiful. And I never forget. So basically, being a pot washer and a kitchen hand and whatnot, you'd be the last guy out because you had to mop the floor and make sure everything was like clean for the chefs the next morning, so they don't slide across the kitchen with a tray of steaks in one hand, you know, comedy style. And I went and got my push bike because I was 14 or something, and I noticed that the changing quarters, there was a light still on. I thought, that's weird, because they're then push button lights that time out after like 20 seconds. You're getting me student accommodation and cheap ass bed sits, you know. I was like, okay. And then I walked in and I noticed a pair of checkered trousers hanging up on the wall. I went, knock, knock, chef? Who's that? I went, it's Neil. He went, Neil, go into the fridge, you know, the walk-in fridge. I went, yeah. And he goes, and get anything with basically Jersey written on it or gold top. I was like, okay. So I went and got the milk, knocked on the door, handed it to him. He goes, can you just like leave now, Neil? I went, okay. So then I asked him, I think I came in on the Saturday morning, I asked him, and he basically told me, I'm a 14-year-old boy. He goes, yeah, I basically didn't wash my hands after handling chili. And after you left, he said, I poured like 2 gallons of milk on my knob in the sink. Wow. Oh, dear Lord. So, yeah, so that's when I came off stage, all I could think of was the poor chef of Boddiscaffin Hall and 2 gallons of gold top Jersey cream. Milk, you know, high fat content. Basically,
that puts a different perspective to milking the cow, doesn't it?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you know, the things that stay with you, you know, as you grow up in life. There I am, you know, it's like 40 years later on stage, thinking, not going to happen to me. And then 3 hours later, I've got an eyeball like Muhammad Ali's punched me in the eye socket, thinking, still didn't learn.
It's a great segue, though, because you talk about your food journey there. So that was the moment that you fell in love with food, or did you always have like that way inclined, that affiliation to food?
So basically it is I was born in 1971, the dark times, which actually what we're going through now is not dissimilar to those times, where the good thing about it was back in those days, there were no supermarkets as such. So you went to the greengrocers and you bought dirty potatoes. You didn't get celery. You didn't get weird things like celeriac and, you know, fennel and stuff like that. It was just basically bog standard cuisine. So you got your British staples, didn't you? Your liver and onions. No.
I agree with that 100%.
Oh, my grandma used to cook it like a Dr. Martin boot. You know what I mean? You bite into it and it's just like, oh, no. And barbecue bingo. Oh.
Save that.
We'll get to that later on. Yes. and we'd have some like awful food. And you know when we get to like later on where we did the online competitions, like, especially with Angus and Oink, and they say like, pick a nation. And I'm like, you know what? No matter what we get in Britain, we've adopted other people's cuisine, haven't we?
Yeah.
You guys are young, so you were probably born late '80s, maybe early '90s. So
late '80s. That's very kind of you, though. Very kind of you.
So there we go. So you know, you had your staples, you know, and there wasn't a lot going on. Then at some point, I went to work for a hotel in Llandudno, though I will mention them, and they did food. Then I go to this place, Bodyscatlan Hall in Llandudno. And I see chefs, and they are heating sugar up and stretching it across two honing blades, if you like, and making baskets out of sugar and making their own sorbets and things like that. But it was the meat. When I looked over, and I would come through and I go, what's that? And they go, that's quail. Would you like a sample? I would go, yeah, hell. And I got right into the food, and I was always asking questions. Now, we get to these staff dinners, and these staff dinners, you're going to balk at this, right? It would always be chips. And then, you know, you buy, like, pizzas, and they're like, that diameter, and there's, like, a 20-pack of them. Yeah. They were deep-fried. Yeah.
Wow.
Like, so they were... What? I mean, there's even Scottish people out there going, what the... You know what I mean? No way. They deep fry them. So the base would be saturated and orange and disgusting. The top would be, well, brown, you know, because it was burned. And that was the staff dinner. I'm thinking, these guys are creating these amazing meals. Now, I would miss out on purpose, I hasten to add, would miss out on the staff dinners. I go to the chef afterwards and go, Chef, I've got nothing to eat. They've stolen it all, and I'm 14 and I'm weak and I've got nothing to eat. And then they would go and give me something that a meal that hadn't gone out. So I'd be getting like a steak that had been done perfectly with peppercorn sauce and a gratin on the side, and then like a load of mange tout tossed in butter as my staff dinner. So I was doing all right, and I would go in and ask them questions and ask them what was going on. And the chefs were like, would you get into cooking? And I was like, fuck no. I've seen the stress you guys are under. I'm going to hang back here, scrape pots, wash pots, and then beg for scraps. And the scraps were primo. I mean, awesome stuff, you know. I mean, I've got some stories about that place that I'll tell you one. So the same chef that burnt his knob on the chilies, he comes up to me one night and he goes, steak's off. And I'm like, what do you mean off? Now, I'm imagining a steak that's green and doing that across the counter.
Yeah.
And he went, it's off the menu. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying. I don't, no comprende mi lingo. what the hell do you want about? And he goes, it's off the menu. We haven't sold enough of it. We've pre-advertised a menu that has been advertised in media, newspapers, because that's all the media that was. And people are coming in for the partridge next week, which has been hung for 21 days or whatever. So I've got a load of steak left over. So he goes, would you like some? I was like, yay, free steak. So I go into the walk-in fridge, and there's this aluminium tray that is like, you know, you can put half a human body on this aluminium tray. It is like six layers deep in steak with a wet muslin cloth over the top. Well, I lift it up and I went, Chef, is it this steak here? And he went, yeah, take as much as you like. And I was like, okay. I got a rucksack. I swear, one of my vertebrae has never been the same since. Like, I was wrapping this stuff up in greaseproof paper, right? I filled my rucksack. It was like one of those ones where you put the rucksack on the counter, you put your arms in, you put your other arms in, and then you got to stand up. There's a distinct noise. You go, I'm okay. I got on my bike and I swear the tyres were like that at the bottom, right? And I cycled all the way home. And I got this steak and I got a frying pan red hot in the kitchen. And these steaks, they were a good inch and a half, inch and three quarter thick, which that taught me a lot that night about that skinny steaks, bullshit, fuck them off. You know what I mean? Yeah. Big fat steak, always good. Banged it on this pan. Now the smell starts wafting up the stairs and my mum, bless her, she goes, "Oh, are you home, darling?" Like, "Yeah, mum, I'm just cooking a steak for me and the dog." Knowing full well, cast the line out. She's like, "Oh, the dog." I'm like, "Yeah, the dog deserves nothing but the best, mum." And she's like, "Oh, okay. Oh, well, enjoy it." She's expecting me to go upstairs and give her a bit, right? I've got the steak and I'm flipping and flipping and flipping. And I put it on the plate and I cut it open and it's blushed inside. I've got salt and pepper on the top. And I just sit there and put a bit in and I just tear the fat off. And I'm like, "Oh my God, this is awesome." I give the dog the fat and the dog gets the bit. The dog's tail's wagging so much. It's like, it's actually banging on the side of the washing machine, making this like constant thud, thud, thud sound. My mum was thinking, "Is he washing a pair of boots downstairs?" You know, it's like, and she's thinking, "Oh, you know what? He could have saved me some." She come down in the morning. What she didn't realize, it was like Jenga. I had stuffed every part of that fridge under yogurts, around things, above, under, around. There was stuff wrapped in things. And she opened up the fridge and she went, "Oh, you bugger." I was like, "Yeah, steak for everyone." So that's what started me off on my of my journey. But there was like a wasteland in between. I moved to London, and you know, no back garden, no flats, etc. And just basically living on 1990s bullshit. So when you come back to the 2000s, you start thinking, "I'm cracking on a bit. I need to live a bit. I need to enjoy my stuff and harken back to what I learned as a 14-year-old washing pots in the kitchen, eyeballing these maestros performing these amazing food feats." And I'm like, "You know what? I need to start going back to that. Not as good as those guys, not even close, but some of that DNA has instilled into what I'm doing." And I don't profess to being amazing. I don't profess to be a pit master, stuff like that. In my book, there are very few pit masters, but there are some amazing people. There are a lot of amazing people out there. There are a lot of competent people out there. And I class myself as competent. I can handle most situations thrown at me. I've got a bead on it. I can cook things, but I'm not the best. You know, you'd have to have some sort of weird ego to think you are the best, unless you actually are.
Oh, I would totally put myself in that camp as well. Competent.
Exactly. Competent. Yeah. Every day is a school day. Every cook is different. You will learn something new every time without fail. I have never produced the same cook twice. Not at all. Anyway, next question, guys.
So I'd mentioned earlier, almost everything that you're putting through Instagram, or a lot of it anyway, is not like what I would call your normal Instagram barbecue page. For example, the beef ragout that you put up recently.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Like phenomenal. I can look at that, and as you're describing it and talking through it, I can tell the difference that's going to raise from, like, if people just think of a standard bolognese, what you're going to get from those sorts of things. So when you're cooking these things, do you see yourself more as like an experimenter that you think, "I've got an idea," or do you look at someone else's idea and go, "I can tweak that, I can change it and make it better"?
No, I don't look at other people's ideas, because I'll tell you my thought. you know, when you sort of stumble across something, you think, "You know what? No one's done that for a while." And I can't remember what it was, but it's a weird Argentinian hot dog style thing in a bread, right? And I thought, nobody's done that. I have not seen that anywhere on Instagram. And I thought, I'm going to do that. And I went out and bought all the stuff. And bugger me, Marcus Borden, bless his heart, 26 years later, goes and bangs one up on Instagram. I'm like, oh, I don't want to be seen as copying somebody else. It starts with me seeing the produce. Now, I hate to say this, but my butcher's awful. Now, I've heard you guys talk about your butchers, and I'm like, son of a bitch, I love a butcher like those guys, you know. And my butcher, I'm not going to say what town I am in, but I've been here 22 years in this house. And I've realised is I've not heard one chopping sound. I've never heard a bandsaw start up. I've never heard a bacon slicer start up. And they just open boxes. So I've gone past there at stupid times in the morning. I've never seen the van with the guy walking out with the white cloth on his shoulder with a carcass over it, ready for butchery. Zero butchery goes on in that butcher's. Mm-hmm. So he's a box shifter.
That's a shame, isn't it?
It's awful. It's like the guy, honestly, if I lobbed a stone as hard as I could, I could hit his roof from here. But I will get in my car and I will travel on a 40-mile round trip to another town because he's an awesome butcher, mm-hmm. to get meat from him rather than go to a guy that I can hit with a stone from my house. And I think the death knell for me was over lockdown. I went there and I thought, you know what? I need some, I got a friend in work, Lewis. He'd just come out of a brain operation. And because it was lockdown and he'd had a brain operation, he got in contact with me and says, I want to do a Valentine's Day meal for me and my girlfriend. Can you help me with that? And I went, yeah, I'm going to do you smash burgers and I'm going to do you fries. And he basically said, we were supposed to go to New York. And he said, the first thing we were going to do was go to a proper burger joint. So I said, I'm going to prepare you. I think I baked Susan Stoneman's milk buns recipe. So I've done the milk buns. I baked all them. And I baked a shitload. And I picked the most uniform ones. I packaged them up for him. I did, I think it was 90-gram size smash burgers. There was Angus and Oink fries with that seasoning I gave him. I said, you know what, I'm not going to do it all for you. You've got to do your own wedges or your own fries. You've got to work for that. I'm not providing you with the whole meal, but I'll provide you with the basics. And I was actually talking to his brother 2 days ago, and he said, mate, that meal was insane. And I was like, dude, you're talking about like 2-3 years ago. You know what I mean? And he goes, I had some of that. And I said, well, you got me to thank for that, because I knew there'd be hangers on going, what's going on there? Is there any leftovers? And I thought, you know what? So I made sure there's enough for his mum, his dad, and his brother. And I put it all in there, and I give him a kit, and I said, I give him the smash burger presses, and I said, you get, if you have to be at a frying pan, put a bit of butter in there or something, put these things on, press them down, give a little rotate, slide off to one side so it doesn't stick to it. I said, give it a couple of minutes, flip it over, and I said, you got yourself a smash burger. I said, 2 or 3 patties. And I said, you put a cloche over the top, plastic cheese, blah, 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 because some people like that stuff, not myself, to be honest with you.
Thank you. And we were talking about this
there
the
we go. Yeah, exactly.
We were talking about this at the weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and, go on, carry on.
So basically, I'd done a custom meal for this guy. I was talking to his brother the other day, and I said, and the real irony of this is I drove home and basically had a bowl of couscous. So I did this fantastic meal, and I didn't even save myself some. But the butcher, he'd done this mince, and I said to him, "I want mince for burgers." He goes, "What do you want?" I says, "I want flavour." I says, "We need fat. You know, obviously the flavour is in the fat." I mean, I've lost weight over the last few months, or what have you, and I know for a fact that I've done things like 5% mince, and I've done things. Yeah, it is great, but the flavour is definitely different. Without a shadow of a doubt, you cannot dispute that at all in any way whatsoever. And you have to make a sacrifice for that sort of thing. But I'm thinking, this guy's having smash burgers. I want 20% fat in there. And I want this thing to go in a pan. He's also put a little bit of butter in. I said to him, you know, don't put an unnatural oil in that pan. Put an oil in that complements that thing. Now, we know butter comes from cows via one way or another. So it complements that. You know, don't go spraying out some synthetic bullshit in there. It's not going to be good. You want the best flavor you possible. And I walked in on the Monday and I said, how was it? And he just went, oh, my God. And he went, my girlfriend. And that's all I needed to hear was my girlfriend said. And I was like, the meal was for him, but it was for her to make up for not going to New York. Yeah. And when he said, my girlfriend said, I was like, we're done. We're happy. You're happy. That's it. Microphone out, drop, enjoy yourself. That's it. I didn't need to hear any more. I was like, yep, yeah, I'm happy. You know, I've done well. And that's it. You know, and then I said, how did your fries turn out? And he went, that fries with that stuff was insane. It's just like insert brand that we're not allowed to mention. It was just like that. But I don't eat there, so I don't know. But yeah, they were happy. I even gave them some tips how to mix up like a mayonnaise to go with it as well. Mm-hmm. And he was like, man, he goes, that was just perfect. I was like, that's it. I'm happy. You know what I mean? I cannot say any more about this. It's like, I'm done. Happy. That's it. Move on. There we go.
Like, awesome. It's so good to do something for other people. And what you've done there is you've created a meal, but you've let him cook it.
Yeah.
Which is great, we've not really talked about that before. We talk about cooking for other people, but not introducing them to things and taking them through
things. The thing is we've all cooked for people that have come to our houses and they've sat down and we're like, boss, right, we're going to start off with this. We're going to start off with that. We're going to wait a couple of hours. We're going to have a few beers. We're going to do this. There's some stuff in there that's taking way fucking longer than I fucking planned for. You all know the drill.
Yeah.
And we're going to eat that about 7 o'clock and then 9 o'clock. They're all going like, we're going home now. And it's like, no, it'll only be 10 more minutes. And then at midnight, it's like, yeah, they've all gone home, but this is fucking awesome. And I'm eating it in my kitchen.
If you've been looking or thinking about an outdoor kitchen, then look no further than AOS Outdoor Kitchens.
They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Their extensive showroom is based just outside Bournemouth on the Dorset-Hampshire border, and as well as numerous in-store displays, also features a live outdoor kitchen where they cook every week on Kamado grills, pizza ovens, and all filmed and shown on YouTube.
They offer a wealth of knowledge on how to transform your patio into the most incredible outdoor dining area with styles and options to suit every budget. And you can guarantee they will be able to create something perfectly suited to you and your home.
They stock and supply everything that you're going to need for outdoor cooking, including barbecues, Kamado ovens, pizza ovens, outdoor fridges, and every accessory that you would need to become the ultimate outdoor chef.
So if you want to make yourself the envy of your friends and neighbours, get in touch with them today to arrange a consultation and take the first step in transforming your back garden into the most incredible entertainment space.
Visit aoskitchens.co.uk.
So yeah, the fact that he actually basically cooked it himself, that was the main drive. It's like, I'm not doing it all for you. Is you've got to do this yourself. Now, he's also got that aspect where he's in his own kitchen and he's sitting there, he's crafting this stuff himself. So I've provided the raw ingredients, but he's crafted that final thing. He sent me pictures and I was like, boy, boom, you nailed that. And he did as well, you know. And he sat there, so his whole family got to smell all that stuff. They got the aromas, they heard the noises, they sat down and ate it. Some of them had to wait a little bit longer and what have you. And I think he also did some freak shakes with it as well. Oh. So he says, what do I do? And I says, freak shakes. Put a pint mug in the freezer, get it out, drizzle it in chocolate, blend up Horlicks with ice cream, put some crunchy stuff on the top, smash the crap out of a load of Maltesers, bang them on the top, wang a flake at the top, drizzle some chocolate over the top, and a bit of strawberry the other way, and a bit of caramel sauce. Get a little bit of sea salt on the top. Boom, Bob's your uncle. Anyway, yeah, I did that. I was like, there we go. So, that was sort of like my first commission, as it were. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. He took that ball and he ran with it.
Oh, fantastic. So just to, I suppose, for anyone that's watching this on YouTube, they'll clearly see that you're... Angus and linked up, if that's the easiest way to say it. So yeah. I understand you're a brand ambassador, talking about them earlier being at Sizzle Fest, and I think when we've met you at Meatopia and other places, you know, obviously you know big fan of their work. So
yeah,
how long have you been involved with Angus and Oink, and kind of how did that come about?
Right, so back in the day, I started off on Facebook, and as we know, Facebook's a shithole. That's face facts, isn't it?
You're sitting on the fence about that.
Yeah.
The weird thing is now, that's a very meta joke as well.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Owen's not happy with that.
Well, the fact that you use the word
Dan's the ship. Dan's a ship pun specialist. So
okay. I've got a t-shirt and everything.
It's like a brown t-shirt.
Yeah.
So basically, I started off on Facebook. I joined a group. I even named the group, and basically, there was a bunch of Mussolinis and Hitlers in that group.
Yeah.
Thou shalt do this. Thou shalt do that. When people join the group, you greet them. And when you do this and do that, and they put up a competition, named the group, and I named it. And what made me realize it was a bit weird was the guy took the group and then he went out and he copyrighted it on like Twitter, Instagram, this, that, and the other. And I was like, okay, fair enough. And then he basically said something to me and he went, I don't like the way you're doing this. I was like, right, so you might have to get the bleep button out here. I was like, Samuel L. Jackson came and I was like, excuse me, motherfucker? What? I was like, and I typed him out the song reply. I said, I feel that this is, I'm 51 years of age, right? I don't mince my words. I ain't got time for that shit. So I basically sent him this message. It was about, I don't know, 12 sentences long. Said, you know what? I'm a single dad. I've got a child. I've got things to be getting on with. I've got a job. I've got this, that, the other. I'm doing this as a hobby. I'm just a guy trying not to burn his dinner in his back garden. And you're asking me to do this. It's labor intensive and da da da. And his reply was, yawn. And I just went, bollocks.
Yeah.
And I went off. So then I joined Instagram. Straight away, I was like, oh, what else can I do? Instagram. Let's join this, create an account. And I went, what's your username? And I was like, Now, I used to ask my mum, and I'd say to her, what are we having for tea tonight, mum? She goes, I'm going to grill a gorilla. And I was like, gorilla, as in grilling,
yeah.
But gorilla, as in warfare. I thought, there we go, there's my handle, Gorilla Gorilla. So I created this account. And then a couple of days later, I fell in with this girl called Becca. Now, Becca had just become Angus and Oink's, like, face of, like, social media. And me and Becca just was, like, bosh, 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 riffing off each other. And I view Becca as, it's one of those things, it's like, imagine you're at a family do, and the family do is crap. And then Becca turns up, and she's that cousin that you know, when you look at you go, yes, it is on, and you know you're going to have a fun time. Like, Becca walks in, she's like, and me and her just clicked. And I was talking to her, and she was talking back to me. And I didn't realize who she was and what she did. And then it was only a little while later that I was investigating rubs, and it said, oh, people were saying, like, salt, pepper, garlic. That's all you need. And I think I got, remember Morrison's during lockdown did the brisket?
Yeah.
Brisket. And it was 13 quid or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes! I'm going to dive off the deep end. I'm going to have a brisket. And I went yumping off to bloody Morrison's. And I got this brisket. And I got it home. I was like, there's string on this. Snip, 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 unroll. Oh, roll. tie. What have I bought? What mm-hmm. is this? We'll get back to understanding meat later on. I was like, I knew there and then. I think half the knack with barbecue is working with what you've got. You can take the world's worst piece of meat. You can do something spectacular with it. You can take the world's best piece of meat, not put a lot of effort into it, and still get something spectacular. So I think you have to work harder with what I call the supermarket bullshit.
Yeah.
A lot harder.
Yeah.
But you've got to learn your craft. I mean, I don't know, it's 3 quid a kilogram. So, you know, you're going to go for that, aren't you? Until you actually get onto the 40, 50 quid, 60 quid, 70 quid, 90 quid briskets. being 4.5 kilograms or whatever. But you got this little nasty Morrison's rolled up brisket. I was like, what the hell do I do with this? And I went online, and there was I saw this guy called Country Wood Smoke on the internet, and he did this beer braised.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, I mean, who knew? And then this guy, he's got a website, but it's concise, straight to the point. I hate all that stuff. You go online and you get like a recipe and you scroll like three times.
It was a Sunday and I thought we'd cook for the family. So I thought I'd wander down to the local deli to have a talk with you.
And here's a picture of my gingham tablecloth. Nobody cares. This guy's like straight to the point. I was like, boom, 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 this, that and the other. I went and got some beer, did this thing. I got in. I thought, this is quite nice. This is okay. And I thought, you know what? If I do salt, pepper, garlic, and I looked at the amounts that were going, I thought, right, I looked at my local spice person that supplies this stuff. I was like, my God, I've got to buy like 20 quid worth of spices here. Mm-hmm. Only salt, pepper, and garlic, 20 quid worth, that's going to take me, I don't know, 8 years to use up in the volumes that I've got here. And I won't do supermarkets because that stuff is just garbage. You know, the stuff is like schwarz. You know, it's not worth the glass jar it is in, end of. I basically did barbecue rubs, and the first place came up with Angus and oink, and I was like, you know what, I get it, Angus and oink, beef and pig. And I was like, that appealed to me straight away. So I clicked on the link, and the humor that was hidden on the website, and I went through that website. I thought, I'm putting an order in, and I ordered the general Texas Talk. And I think Dirty Cow. I was on a bit of a beef thing. And it came through, and I think I'd messed up. I think I was going to use Texas Talk. And, you know, back in the day when all the labels were white?
Yeah.
So I got them in front of me, and I've got a set of beef sorties. And I reached out, concentrate on the beef sorties. I've got my mustard over the whole thing. I've washed my hands. And I thought, right, I'm going to put the rub on. Oh, I had two sets of beef sorties. I tell a lie. Greedy bastard. Well, yeah, if you've got all the grill space, you've got to use it up, haven't you? And I think I'd ordered the beef sorties from John Davison's Butchers up in Scotland. And they come through, and they were like this wide, that big on the meat. The bones were down here. They were like 2 kilograms plus. They were
proper.
They were big. I said, boom. And I reached out and I picked up a label. Now, I say, do you remember when the labels were white? Well, the general, as far as I know, had the colourful label on it. I don't know why, but I had a peripheral vision, or I don't know. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. I was tripping balls or whatever. I picked up the wrong rub, and I went, dusty, dusty, dusty. I thought, this is a bit orange looking. The general, oh, I put the wrong rub on. I thought, well, I've started
to
finish.
Yeah.
Dusty, dusty, dusty. Put to one side. Put the lid on, wash my hands, pick up the next rub, Texas Talk, over the ribs, out to my Pro-Q, bang them both on, bit of cherry smoke, happy days. I get to later on in the day, the ribs come off, and I'm looking at them all. Now, they both look the same. Now, what I did was in the kitchen, so basically, no matter what rub you put on, when you've spritzed and done whatever, the colour is a uniform coffee brown. So I used to put the two rubs in the kitchen in the same place that I put them on the smoker. So I came in, put them in my box. I rested them for, I don't know, 3 hours or something like that. Opened the box, took them out, unwrapped them. And I was like, well, there's the one I've made a mistake on. There's the one I intended. And I pulled the bone out. I cut a piece of meat off the corner. I put it in. I was like, oh, this is what it's all about. This is just... oh, it's just beautiful. okay, here's the one I've made the mistake on. Same routine, cut a bit off the corner, put it in my mouth, and I was like, oh my God. And that's when I realized this, a happy mistake was the best thing I have done in a long time. And I have put the OG on briskets. Now, I'm probably one of the few guys to do it. There may be a couple more guys that do that, but I will put the general. And it turns out it's one of Angus and Oink's first rubs. So I went and found them on Facebook. So I joined Facebook. I said, I've just done this. This is amazing. Some people join in with me and talk to me. I'm like-minded souls. There's some nice people on Facebook. There's not some dickheads like there is on the other side. So I joined the Federation. I started off my Instagram page. This girl called Becca says, hey, you're using our stuff. I get talking with her. She talks to me. She sends me some stuff. It snowballs. And basically is, I think they call me sometimes the guy that has every rub we've ever made. So every payday, I was like, 9 rubs. To the point where I was like, have you got something I haven't got? And they were like, no, Neil, you've bought them all. And I was like, okay. And I that summer, I used them all as well. There was not like, I think out of every week, there were 2 days where I didn't cook. Maximum. Lockdown, beautiful. Beautiful period, as we all know. You know, that was the movement truly gained momentum then. And then she sent me some prototypes, and I was like, "Wow, this is awesome!" And then I tried them out, and I was like, "I give them feedback on it." Then it basically the account snowballed. Followers came in. I'm not bothered about followers, by the way. What I do like about the followers that I've got is I say to them, "Anytime you can message me." You can phone me if you want. I'll give you my phone number. You can talk to me anytime you like. I am always available to you. Even from the mental health aspect, I've had a few people talk to me about the mental health thing, and I've talked with them. So this snowballed to the point where we got to like the Christmas and Meat Fire Whiskey. Bill at Sizzle Fest. Yeah. He messaged me and goes, who's an Angus and Link ambassador? I was like, wow. And then he sent me the link. I looked and he'd been made an ambassador. And I was like, dude, I am so happy for you. That is amazing. I'm like, amazing. Then I see Sue Stoneman pop up on Instagram. I've been made an Angus and Link ambassador. And I'm like, yes, amazing. We've got like another person. And then I think Rob's Barbecue popped up. Rob Claydon, low barbecue at the time. Rob C Eats Now. Yes. He was one. Kevin Edge pops up and goes, I've been made an ambassador. I'm like, man, these guys are awesome. Oh, there's a message here. Click. And there's a wanted poster. And there's my picture on it. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And he goes, wanted, gorilla, to be an Angus and Link ambassador. And I was like, what? You know, when you look at something, you go, I don't know if they picked an ambassador each or whatever, but I'm pretty sure the Becca connection had come along and I was an ambassador and it said, do you accept? And I was like, fuck yes. then it was like that bit on a roller coaster ride where you go clackety, 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 and then you get to that bit just right at the top and you go, what happens to fire? It hasn't stopped since. It's just like I'm still on the use in the word fuck.
So Owen and I
go on then.
Yes,
Owen, yeah, Owen.
Here's a question. Do you use other rubs but Angus and
No.
Ike?
No.
You're exclusive.
Exclusive. End of. Don't need to.
That speaks for itself.
Why do I need to drive a Robin Reliant when I've got a Bentley to ride around in?
Yeah, fair. Well, I mean, we're big fans.
No offense to anyone else. There are some great rub companies out there, but is with Angus and Oink, it's not just the rubs as well, it's the sauces as well. Now, I don't even want to say the word out loud because she's in the room upstairs. But if I say Red House too loud, she will come pack me down the stairs and go, RH. You know what I mean? that sauce was just amazing. You know, the Thai stuff. So instead of having, you know, what I call standard British barbecue, you can extend yourself into the Korean. You can extend yourself into the Argentinian. You can go beyond. Everyone thinks barbecue. Everyone goes American. Everyone goes Australia. As far as I'm concerned, Australian barbecue is down there. It's not even in the top. I know 10.
I love Korean. Korean barbecue is beautiful
all day long. I mean, you get yourself a Korean chicken burger. I mean, you get yourself a normal chicken burger. Yeah, it's a chicken burger, but you do a Korean burger and you do some pickled stuff with it and a few sides, of which sides are important. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing where is I've tried to extend myself into the sides point of view, but I don't do enough sides, as far as I'm concerned, on some of the meals that I do, because they don't need them. But I did that on Saturday night. I got an air fryer and I did the Tennessee hot chicken burger, and I went with sides on there. Pickles. There was coleslaw, which I made with Angus and ranch. There were Mac Bites. There were fries with that on. And the whole meal was just an absolute joy to behold. And I'm going to admit now, I made it twice and I ate it twice. And I sat there with my belt undone.
With twice in one night?
Yeah. I sat there with the belt and then going, "Ooh, I'm having a baby. I'm having a baby."
Oh, I take my hat off to you, because totally there's many a times that I've wanted to do that.
Like, Owen's told me off before for having a whole tomahawk to myself. But the thing is, I love, my problem is once I start eating, I can't stop. Whenever I've had to like try and lose weight, it has to be through exercise, because I'm not going to stop eating what I enjoy.
Right.
That's where barbecue's good for me, because the flavour is an explosion.
The thing about a tomahawk, right, is we love barbecue leftovers, right?
Barbecue we do. Tomahawk is not a leftover. Half of my count is leftover cooks. Like, I love leftover barbecue stuff and what you can do with it.
I think leftover barbecue is the unsung hero that nobody talks too much about. So basically, I bought myself a sous vide. Not many people talk about that sort of thing, but the sous vide, as far as I'm concerned, is you've got a tank of water in your kitchen, you've got a wand, you've got an app that talks to it. You can wake up at, I work shift, so I can wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and get some pulled pork out. I can put it in there, peg it on the side. The water will defrost the pulled pork. Now, at 3 o'clock, that device will start up, the impeller goes up, the heater engages, pulled pork starts heating up because it's defrosted nicely in the water during the day over, I don't know, 8 hours. I come home, the child is like, "Daddy, what are we having for dinner?" And it's like, "Well, it'll be sorted. At 5 o'clock, there's a beef in the kitchen, two buns, toasted, cut them open, cut open the bag, sourced pulled pork on the buns, bosh, off you go. Best dinner ever, Daddy."
The fact that also with the sous vide, you just pick the temperature and let it go. Just let it go. Yeah, and if it needs to stay in there longer, exactly, it doesn't matter. It's not going to overcook. It's going to stick to that one level. Gives you so much choice.
So leftovers are safe and tasty. I'm not dry as a Gandhi's flip-flop, basically. No offense. But, you know.
Just out of interest, sous vide is something ever talked about on the podcast in the 30 odd episodes that we've done so far, so this is a first for us. But
okay,
myself and Dan worked for a media company in our day jobs, and we both worked on a food magazine, and we'd kind of touched upon and spoke to some clients around sous vide before, but never in huge detail. Do you ever actually cook anything from scratch, as in raw, in a sous vide, like salmon? Yes. or something like that?
Does
it not give off like a jelly flavor, like a jelly texture?
No, because I think it's a case of reading what you've got in there. So I've done things like, weirdly enough, I've done like things like sous vide potatoes. Ooh. So topping potatoes up, basically, I don't know, 20 mil thick, butter, garlic, cloves in there, or I've even smoked some garlic outside. You chop the top off and put a bit of olive oil on, and then you just squeeze the whole bulb in. And I've put potatoes in there and done them in the sous vide and then taken them out. So, it's not just meat, it's been veg as well. A backpacker is essential when you've got something like sous vide. I've done things like that. I've also done the thing where you've done a steak and you take it's like 45 degrees. And then you just go outside,
finish it. You've
got a roaring hot Weber kettle, sizzle, sizzle, tap, tap, tap either side, bring it in, and you eat it. But I think it's not quite a substitute for being on the grill and salt and pepper, or the other one I like, and Hungry Oink put me onto this one as well, on steaks, and not many people do it. I think it's like three or four of us, gaucho.
Ooh.
The Angersonic gaucho rub on a steak is like legendary in my book. I wish more people would give it a go. So when you do a sous vide steak, I mean, you take it outside and you, then you give it a sear, it's missing something. It's nice. It's almost perfect because it's pink all the way through. And your yeah. sort of Maillard reaction is only like 0.5 of a mil deep. But I think the Maillard reaction outside, doing that sort of thing, just keep flipping, just Pryor's method. And this business of scorch marks on the outside, nobody's got time for that, right? It's theatrical, visual, Instagram bullshit, right? It's your steak is not on there long enough. It's just keep flipping. Because if you're sitting there doing that and putting those big marks on there, you're also going to burn your seasonings and rubs on the outside. Mm-hmm. And it might look good, but I bet you it doesn't taste its best. So I just flip, bring it indoors, let it rest. It might be a tin foil over the top and a big pile of big-ass kitchen towels on the top, you know, tea towels. Get on with your sides or whatever. Take that steak out. I'm a big, big proponent of surf and turf.
Yeah.
Good surf and turf as well. I'm talking like monkfish.
Tiger prawns.
Yes. Tiger prawns. Yes. And, you know, and a good fat steak as well, all day long. That is usually my once a month treat. I don't always put it on Instagram because I've scrammed it like you do. You've got a tomahawk, you sit there, it's all elbows. If a kid turns up, she's got an elbow in the cheek, you know what I mean? It's like in the mouth, and it's done. I mean, you sit and think, I can't take a picture of a bone and some grease. Or can I?
You definitely can.
It's like,
happy face.
Completed it, mate. Scrammed it.
Yeah.
What I want to know, resting, right?
Yeah.
So if you're resting a steak, do you do anything to that steak at all? I'll explain what I mean by that if you say no.
So the problem with resting is you're going to, it's cooling at the same time it's resting. So I'm going to say insulation is the key. So, for example, I did a brisket, and this brisket was part of the Angersonic barbecue school, and John Davis has sent me a 4.5 kilogram brisket. So this polystyrene box turns up on my door. DPD go ding dong. I open the door and he can't put it through my front door. He turns it sideways. And I'm like, what the fuck? I go into the living room. It's on the sofa here. I get the Stanley knife out. I open the box. I lift it up. Chicken wings for one of the barbecue schools. There's pig cheeks, there's something else, whatever. And at the bottom is his brisket. And I'm looking at it and I went, oh my God. I went on the WhatsApp group that I was with a load of, actually, the WhatsApp group I was in, it's with a lot of the what I call the barbecue stars now, the up and coming guys from the movement. Won't name names, but we were a massive 50 strong group and it was a beautiful thing to be in. I went, guys, I did a live video, I went, look at my brisket. I was like, and everyone was like, what the hell? I mean, it was about that thick. So basically, that brisket was made aerodynamic. And the trimming was very minimal. I put the trimmings in the freezer to make sausages with. And I put this on I've got a hammer forge. So I put it in the hammer forge. And instead of using charcoal, I decided I'm not running any technology whatsoever. I am going by touch, by sight, by smell, and I used brine wood. So there was the charcoal only started off the bed. The brine wood was put underneath, it was put on top, it was even put inside the barbecue. It's a reverse flow smoker. I set the dials nicely, and I put these sticks of wood on, the nice chunks of wood. They're the right size of the drawer. I put them in, they ignite within 20 seconds. And every 20 minutes, I just went out there during the day, stick, shut the drawer. I get to some point, and I'm going to include a barbecue fail in this as well.
Yeah. Oh, go on.
Two fails. They're not taste fails. They're noob fails, right? So at one point, this I get to about 170 degrees. I think I'm at 170 degrees. There's no meters. There's no probes. But I go in and I get a cocktail stick. There's just a little bit of resistance and a little bit of a push through. And I'm thinking, I reckon we're at 170.
Crunch.
We're wrapped. Yeah. The bark is nice, but we've got resistance. So I put the gloves on. I grab the brisket. I hurtle across the garden, get into the kitchen, butcher's paper all the way around the outside. I double up on it. I think I put some tallow in there. I've given it a final spritz, maybe a couple of the bits and bobs. I can't remember. Maybe I've touched up a couple of thumbprints that I've put on where the rubber's maybe rubbed off. Also, before you do that, a little tip for people is if you look at your grain on your brisket, and when you covered it in rub, you're not going to know where your grain is. Cut a little notch in the corner, 45 degrees to that grain. That's where you're going to cut with your knife afterwards. Little tip for you there, people.
What a tip. What a tip.
There we go. Because you're flying blind, aren't you, when you come out? So I covered this thing in. I took it straight in. I think Sue Stoneman alluded to this as well. I closed the lid on the hammer forge, and I'm standing there, and I'm like, we're wrapped. We're in the end game. It's just waiting. Let's go in, rejoice with beer, and have a damn good time. Why the hell's this thing 80 degrees? And there's a perfect pierce mark straight through the butcher's paper. Where I've slammed the lid down, and the thermometer's gone straight into the brisket. I'm like, son of a bitch. Leg it back to the kitchen. More butcher's paper around the outside. Back in. Slide it further back in. Close the lid down. And the worst thing I did then, afterwards, was about 9 o'clock at night. I think I basically had a bit of an old man snooze on the sofa. I thought, brisket. And I went outside, and I just basically, straight through the paper, got a toothpick, and he went, I was like, oh my God, this is ready. This is so ready. And I picked it up, and I think I had a set of New Balance trainers on at the time. And as I walked away, what I call the liquor inside, all that delicious, completely poured out of the bottom of the brisket wrapped parcel straight into my trainer. I'm hobbling down the garden going, oh, so hot, so hot, so hot, so hot, so hot. And I had to just get to the kitchen. I was like, oh my God, I pulled my trainer off, I pulled my sock off, my top of my foot was like pink. I was like, well, if that was a steak, I'd be happy with that, you know. So I opened it. I've got a Yeti roadie, a King Crab Yeti roadie, which I got from SoCal Barbecue. Thank you very much, guys. And dropped the brisket in that, put the towels on the top, closed the lid, went to bed. Woke up the next morning. You wake up in the morning, it's like, it's Sunday morning. What am I going to do with my day? I'm scratching. I'm lying in bed. My morning is awesome. What are we going to have for breakfast? Brisket is in the kitchen. And I came down them stairs, I swear, four at a time. I was like, woohoo! The child is like, brisket! She's like almost on my back. We come into the kitchen. I open up the cooler. The steam comes out. I'm like, we still got some heat. I take the towels off. The towels, right? I don't care how much Lenore and comfort you use, they don't smell as good as smoky, brisket encapsulated towels. Pull them off to one side. Put the brisket on the work surface, and then something in my head went, film it. I don't know why. When I put it down, there was this weird gelatinous wobble. I thought, I went slow motion. And I came in, and you see the video, and my hand comes in and spanks it like a stripper's bum, and the whole brisket went wobble, 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 wobble. And Instagram lost their mind over it. They were like, oh my God. It was like beers in the air and the crowd screaming and what have you. And I cut the corner off, and we got a couple of white buns. There was nothing else. I just put brisket in it, and I handed one to my child. And we both bit into it, and I looked at her across the kitchen, and her eyes rolled back, and she went, oh, brisket. And it was like, you didn't need to see anything else. So, yeah, resting. And going back to your original question, resting is important. All meat needs resting, bar none. Except fish doesn't need resting as long, because it's pretty much done, but all meat needs resting. A steak, whilst you're saying there, a steak is resting, I will cover it in tinfoil. I will bang a load of towels over the top, and I will get my surf and turf ready. So my prawns might be getting a quick flash on the barbecue. So there'll be tiger prawns, but I'll shell them, put them in butter, maybe put a bit of chili on top of them, get them going, and then you just pile all that up. You wash your hands, you sit down, the knife and fork comes out, and you just get your surf and turf on. The end.
That's the thing. That's awesome. Because Owen and I don't have like a cooler, like a Yeti or like a Utoka or anything. And so even with our experience, you start to worry. It gets like 3 or 4 hours, and you go, is this still how we're going to be feeling about this and everything? It's
right. So Christmas Day, I'm not doing this yet. I am turkeyed out. I am sick to death of turkey, mm-hmm. but I must admit, one of the best turkeys I've ever had. I took it out of the oven 45 minutes before I was even doing anything else. And it was still covered in the tinfoil. Even though the tinfoil had been off to brown up the skin on the outside, I put the tinfoil crown back on and I covered it in bath towels, mm-hmm. slid it across the counter, cracked on with other stuff, got stuff on the go. That turkey was still servable hot and edible hot 45 minutes later.
Mm.
So you rest it. Now, we've all suffered that turkey where it's almost like a National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. You know, they fang the turkey.
yeah.
It pops open and it's dry as hell. We don't need that in our life. Nobody needs that. So basically, go on.
I was just going to say, go back to the... I've wrapped many a brisket in a towel. I don't have... You're right, Dan. I don't have a Yeti cooler or whatever. I have a cheap cooler, but something to put a brisket in. I've washed that towel probably 20, 30 times, but you can still smell the brisket on it.
Yeah.
It's just that comfort, isn't it? Even though it's clean, that smell is amazing.
I've got these towels that are like a lavender colour that I know are basically the brisket towels.
So that was part one of our two-part episode with Grilla Gorilla on the Meat and Greet Barbecue podcast. You can check out our website, our Instagram. Just search for us, Meat and Greet Barbecue podcast. We also have a shop with various different affiliate links and also some merch. We'd love to hear from you as well through any of those different ways you can get in contact with us, either through the website with emails or message us through Instagram, Facebook, any of the social medias really. And we'll have part two of our chat with Neil from Grilla Gorilla coming very shortly. But until next time, keep on grilling. Today's episode of the Meat and Greet Barbecue podcast is brought to you by AOS Outdoor Kitchens. They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.